What in East Dallas is going on?
I'm Camille.
And I'm Rich.
Hey, Rich, today we have a wonderful guest, since in honor of Veterans Day this month.
Yes.
November.
Yeah.
We are going to honor one of our local Lakewood veterans.
And he's a legend.
He's a legend, Mr. Herb Shaner.
Mr. Herb Shaner, welcome to the show. So first of all, Herb is my dad's name. I'm just going to let you know that. That's awesome. I love my dad. And he is our oldest guest.
He is our oldest guest. We have to give away your age, Herb. Sorry, but I want people to know that this veteran is 99 years old, and he will turn 100 next year.
Next year in August.
In August.
Yeah.
And he is, I have to say, absolutely amazing.
Phenomenal. And we're going to get into his story here in just a second. So we're over here at Insurance.
Shaner
Insurance.
His office.
Yeah, the office is right over here, right off of Abrams, right? And you guys have been here for how long?
1952.
Okay.
Okay.
1952. Wow.
Yes, and it's sir. Herb and then his son, Mike.
Yes. So first of all, thank you both for doing the show.
Thank you.
You know, that's very kind of you to let us invade your space, and we do appreciate it. So,
and we want to say thank you for serving your country.
Oh, my gosh. So how long were you in the military, first of all?
Let's see. I was among the 18-year-olds that was drafted back in 1943.
Okay.
I graduated from high school in 1942. So I was drafted less than a year out of high school.
Wow.
And
where did you graduate high school?
At Forest Avenue High School. That's near Fair Park over in South Dallas.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And during the war, my grandfather and my mother and others that were my grandfather's children moved over here where I have this house at 2501 Abrams Road.
Wow.
And that was when I was in the Army.
Okay.
Okay.
There wasn't a lot here back then, was there?
It was pretty quiet. Well, mostly quiet with cars, gasoline and rationing, and it was very difficult. If I came home and then I had a date with a girl, I was lucky to get my aunt's car. Okay. And lucky to get some gasoline.
Wow.
But it was rationed for the civilians, you know, and it was...
back in the day.
So it was... there was one gasoline station that I think maybe illegally sold gasoline in Dallas. So, you know, veterans like me found out where that was. Yeah. So if we needed a little extra gasoline, but it was hard on the... civilians during World War II with the rationing, yeah. You know.
Wow.
So we want to have you tell your story, and for our listeners, let me set up your story a little bit. So Mr. Shaner was a POW of World War II.
Correct.
Yes, POW of World War II. And y'all, if you haven't done the math, he was born in 1924, Camille.
Yeah.
24.
Like 1924.
Like, we didn't have any cell phones back then. In fact, most people didn't even have phones. Okay, so.
No.
Well, I was raised in the country, and you're telling the truth. Well, I was raised in the third, fourth, and fifth grade in the country. The outhouse was the bathroom toilet was out in the backyard and a little out in the country, you know, where it was a little shack like.
That's amazing.
But it was during the Depression. And so we got a lot of benefits getting in the Army when they did draft
young
men. We were coming out of the Depression. We got to eat three meals a day.
I didn't think about that.
Yeah. Yeah. So, for some people, it was a good avenue, right? Growing up in the Depression. So you were drafted while you were at Texas A&M, correct?
That's right. Not only me, but all the 18-year-olds.
Okay.
And we all went in the Army about the same time.
Okay. And where were you stationed?
Well, when I was first drafted, and my buddy came from A&M, went to A&M, and I went with him. I know the fellow interviewing me in the Army said, I see you've gone to college and that you were in school, and that's correct. he decided there was a program, Army Specialized Program, and there was at that time. I knew nothing about it, but he set me up for that, and I went to the University of Alabama. And where my buddy wasn't advised of that, he went directly into Fort Knox up in the Kentucky and ended up in the Pacific.
Wow.
And I might have still been in school at that time. They sent me to the University of Alabama.
Okay. And how long were you there?
Well, probably a year.
Okay.
And that Congress probably got in trouble sending kids back to school when the war was going on in Italy. We were stymied. And here we were sending young kids that should have been in fighting and helping with the war effort. So they disbanded the school programs.
Okay.
And they took us out of Texas A&M, and I went straight to the infantry division up in Indiana.
Okay.
Camp Atterbury, the 106 infantry division.
All right.
Wow.
And how long were you at that camp?
I got there in May, and then twice, I think, that they had most everybody was sent as replacements going overseas.
Okay.
Then eventually, back from May into November, we were training, and I was, by that time, I'd earned expert marksman in the rifle.
Okay.
Rifle, and then that was something that kept me from going overseas. They kept me in the States.
Really?
But finally, in November, the whole division that I was training with, had trained with, went over to France and ended up in, they went to England for a month.
Okay.
And then landed at Le Havre, went by truck up to the German, Belgium border, and right into the old Siegfried line. That was a defensive position the Germans built before the war.
Okay.
And now we had occupied those lines, and there we were. And
can I ask you what you were thinking when you were driving up there? What was going through your head?
I don't know. I was just in the back of the truck, and the most I was thinking was the cold weather that I was experiencing because it was December.
Okay.
And then once we crossed, going across France, I saw a German tank that was disabled off of the road. I didn't have much thought other than...
Were you scared?
Than that. No. No, I don't know. No.
You were young, probably.
Yeah, too young and didn't know to get scared.
Yeah, naivety.
Nobody was ready. None of us were scared. I mean, we hadn't been shot at or injured or haven't had any shelling. We were pretty confident.
You didn't know. You didn't know.
No, we didn't know. We didn't know a thing. We just, you feel pretty confident of your abilities. And, no one was really scared of. And
so take us to right before you became a prisoner. Where were you, and how did that end up happening?
Yeah.
Well, we went by the truck and got off and displaced a whole division of men, which is about 15,000 men.
Wow.
And then we took their places.
Okay.
And we weren't there maybe two or three days before we were captured.
What?
The Germans started the Battle of the Bulge.
Okay.
And there were four American divisions on the line that were involved in this great big battle.
Okay.
And I've read, and that's true, that was the biggest land battle the American Army had ever been in.
Wow.
And the four divisions were involved. They all retreated except my division, and that's why I got captured. Because we didn't, the colonels and the captains, they were new, and they just gotten there. They weren't going to give. They weren't going to give up something.
Sure.
They were responsible for holding. Well, in the end... it was a bad decision because we ended up being surrounded and had no choice with no food or no artillery support.
How many of you all did they capture?
Well, my whole company.
And how many was that?
Well, a company's about 175 men.
Whoa.
And that's just our company. Okay. And there were there may be other companies. Like, we don't have been in the line, and the current and our general, like I say, if he retreated unnecessarily, it might be a bad reflection on him.
Yeah.
We hadn't retreated in the war yet. We pushed the Germans all the way back across France and into their own territory. Mm-hmm. And he didn't get word to retreat, and his superior was down there about 30 miles below him, and I forget that man's name right now, but that Army man later became the president of Texas A&M.
Wow.
But unless that fella, this colonel down there, I knew it all, but here at 99, I have a lot of my memory and names I can't bring up.
Sure.
Six months ago, I could have, but suddenly I'm getting old.
No, you got a long
time. So I'll be 100 here next summer, but
Wow.
So after they captured you, where did they take you all?
They took us from the front lines and down to a little town, and that was we held that little town before they attacked. And then I remember that we stood by the roadside while German tanks drove by, and the Germans in their trucks and their tanks, many of them one bumper to bumper, would look down at us, and we'd look up at them. And I know at the time I thought those Germans didn't know what they were in for.
Wow.
Because we'd only been in the lines just a few days.
Right.
And we weren't experienced at all. But they were going to be in against the veteran armies and soldiers of the United States Army as they advanced back into France.
Wow.
And sure enough, of course, the Americans stopped them. But we were new, and they looked down at us, too, and looked sympathetically. So it wasn't any rah-rah going on or anything like that.
They looked at you with sympathy, huh?
Well, I'd say they did.
Interesting.
We were still foggy and can't understand why we were captured. It just wasn't possible.
But
we just happened during that planned attack by Hitler. We stayed in place up there until we were surrounded and had no way to get out of there. We lost our artillery support. We lost our food, and the officers voted then to surrender us. The Germans came through. We held out about 5 days.
Wow.
And then the Germans came through and said, we're going to have some artillery come in down the road through your positions. And we're going to use it on your men.
Wow!
So the Americans thought it's best not to just save lives and surrender. We infantry guys, and they did, because there's more people during World War II that were killed by artillery than rifle bullets. That's a fact.
Wow!
Yeah. They had to hit these trees and the limbs and the shrapnel and the shelling would fall down on the troops below them and give them injuries or kill them. And it was a good thing the officers did vote to surrender.
Tell us a
surprised, little, but that's what happened.
Tell us a little bit about your experience while you were a prisoner in the town or the camp.
Well, after we were surrendered, we went back to the first little town that the Germans, into Germany. Mm-hmm. And they put us in boxcars.
Okay.
And we didn't go very far. Maybe 20 or 30 miles. It was actually a British aircraft came over and went up and down our line of boxcars shooting bullets, and you could hear it splattering.
What?
And you're there, you just swivel up small because you could hear it splattering in the woods. And finally one... We were parked in a railroad yard. One of the small guys got out through the air vent and let everybody out. We formed a POW in the snow, in the snow. And the British, it was a British aircraft, realized he was shooting up Americans and killing them.
Oh,
so we walked all the way back from there, which was I don't know, I always said 100 miles, but it's not that far. But we didn't want to get any more boxcars because we didn't know that they'd be strafed, and we did now. And then once you get back to the Rhine River, you could get, we got back in boxcars, and the Allies did not strafe anything moving over on the other side of the Rhine.
Okay.
So we went, took about 5 days to get down by Leipzig, where our prison camp was. And the reason it took so long, you couldn't move during the day because the bombing, we did have kept bombing up on the railroads, and they were being repaired or being torn apart. And so they had to repair it before we could move on. And it was a... And we didn't eat during that time.
I was going to ask, when did you eat?
Well, we didn't. Fortunately, the Army had fed us so good that you could go for days and days without eating, even get hungry, probably. But after a while, you can't keep going that way.
Right.
Then that's when you really hurt, and all you could think of was food.
Food. Mm-hmm. You know, the reality is his experience of going, I can't imagine... Mm-mm. Being overseas when you don't know anything, you don't have any food, you don't know what's next, it's cold.
Yeah.
And you're away from your family. Could you imagine you're 18, 19 years old?
No.
I mean, most 18 to 19 year olds can't even find their shoes. You know?
Well, that's right. It was,
they'd starve to death in Dallas.
So when did your family get word that you had become a prisoner?
Well, it was several weeks after I became a prisoner that they finally got word on a communication from Washington, D.C.
Okay.
I guess the Red Cross finally got that information from the Germans, and then they relayed it over to American Red Cross in America of the people and the names, and then the Army told my mother. She lived right here in this house where I'm speaking from on Abrams.
This house?
Yeah, right here.
That we're
she lived
in.
Here. Well, she worried nearly every night, she
I'm
said.
Sure.
But then one night she thought an angel had come to her bedside in her bedroom over here and told her, don't worry, that he's all right. Don't worry.
Wow.
And she stopped worrying. And sure enough, I was alive, but she didn't know it at that time. It took 2 or 3 months before
she knew.
After the Battle of the Bulge, before the Germans let the Americans know how many prisoners they had and their names.
Yeah.
Civilians went through a lot back then. We knew we were alive. They didn't.
They didn't.
You know, sure, she was sick with worry.
Could you imagine?
No.
The initial notice that she received was a missing in action.
Okay.
So for months, she didn't know his condition, whether he was dead or captured or just missing.
Wow.
It wasn't until about April that they received the Red Cross message.
Holy cow. Okay, so with that, how many men did you lose in the unit when you guys are being captured?
Well, we were sent to a prison camp, and that prison camp held Indians from India.
Oh, uh-huh.
They held prisoners from all over. British, and we were put in a British barracks the first night or two.
Okay.
And that was a big camp, Stalag 4B. And it the first night I was there, I was either dreaming or I thought I was dreaming. I heard music that I was dancing to up in Indianapolis before I went overseas with the Army, with dancing with the Butler University girls. And then it faded, and I went back to sleep. The next morning, I asked the British guy there where I had a bunk in that British barracks. He said, "Yeah, you did. We have a BBC report every morning. A fella comes in and gives us what's going on in the war, and we also have a radio. I mean, have a system in place to give music and make music and make you guys feel at home." And he sure did. I thought I was back in the States there for a while.
Wow.
And I realized the next day I was back in prison camp. Mm-hmm. And but they had a receiver hidden from the Germans.
Okay.
And they never found it. And they were very active, the British. Of course, they'd been prisoners since they were captured in Africa.
Oh, wow.
And so they've been around a long time.
Okay.
And we Americans were just brand new, and they... I didn't stay there long, and being a private, they sent me out to do work.
Okay.
With 99 other prisoners, and
okay,
there'd be 100 of us do work in the fields. And other prisoners went out to work on the damaged railroad lines.
Oh, gotcha. Okay.
But in my case, it was just working at the drainage and farmers' ditches and just...
Okay. Wow.
Keeping us active, I guess.
Yeah. What kind of food did you eat? Do you remember?
We got no breakfast.
No breakfast?
Nothing to drink,
horrible.
Nothing to eat. And we got 30 minutes off for lunch. And we'd be sitting in the snow or the sleet out there in the field in Germany, East Germany, below Berlin. And there was no lunch, so, and then we'd come back into the barracks there at dinner time and get maybe a little more than probably a cup of soup, cabbage soup or something like that. So obviously you're going to get down around 100 pounds. You
Whoa.
Might be 150 or 60 pounds. Next thing you know, you're 95 pounds.
Yeah, how much?
Not just you, I mean all the prisoners.
Yeah. How much did you weigh when you came back? Do you remember?
I know I got down probably 89 pounds or 9. But before I got back, they kept me they fed me well over in England.
Okay.
They gave me, I had about 6 meals in the afternoon.
Yeah, you did.
About every 2 hours, I was hungry again.
I mean,
and they gave me a meal. And
I mean, think about it, though. You're only getting one small cup of soup
a day.
Yeah.
And what about water?
Well, what really saved our lives, though, it was the Red Cross parcels that were really finally delivered to us by the Red Cross.
Okay.
The Germans believed in the Red Cross, and so did the Americans. So with the Red Cross, you got food that was American, packaged in America.
Okay.
And they went to Germany, then they distributed it to the prisoners. But it took time.
Yeah.
That's why I got down. Until I got that, I was in bad shape.
Yeah.
Even with that, I was not. But it was a good thing to get a package of food.
Oh.
And that would last the 2 weeks between two men. But
wow.
we ate just a little bit at a time.
Yeah. So let's take a little break, and then we'll come back and talk about your actual escape and
Thank
that
you.
Story.
Yeah.
All right.
All right. We'll be right back with the incredible. I mean, this is incredible.
It's incredible.
Okay.
Thank
right.
you.
We'll be right back. Camille, when you have a medical emergency, you really want to get somewhere fast.
Yes, time is of the essence, and you want to make sure you're in good hands.
Lucky for us, right here in East Dallas, we have the convenience of White Rock Medical Center.
With a full-service emergency room led by Dr. David Derrigan.
And they're open 24 hours a day and easily accessible right off of Buckner Boulevard.
Yes, at 9440 Poppy Drive.
If you want more information about White Rock Medical Center, go to whiterockmedicalcenter.com. That's whiterockmedicalcenter.com.
So, Mr. Shaner, you're a prisoner now.
Yeah.
So can you tell the story about how you actually escaped? You and how many other men escaped with you?
Mike, you might have to help me out. Now, I remember now. I'm trying to think. See, I was in a prison camp, Stalag 4B,
okay.
And there were thousands of prisoners there from American, British, and different prisoners. I didn't escape from a prison camp.
Okay.
Because they sent us out to a work area, and there might be 100 of us, and they'd put us, say, in an abandoned church and just lock us up for the night. And
Oh, gotcha.
And they'd have 2 or 3 civilian guards, and they were usually about 60 to 80 years old. They older men, people. So they weren't. And if we got a real Nazi, then we better behave.
Okay.
Otherwise, around these older men, We might be led behind a German's house and get some food that they've stored and put it in our underneath our shirts.
Hide it.
Take it with us.
Yeah.
But if you get a real Nazi, a real guard, they beat you up with, they use their cane to get, they're mad, you know.
Yeah.
But a lot of the Germans, when they're older, 60 and 70 years old, they were sympathetic to the prisoners. And I know once I was behind a German house and found some carrots and was started eating on it. I don't, I guess they're not clean. No wonder I had dysentery for all this time. I was eating on it, and here the German guard came over and looked at me, and I raised it up over my shoulder, offered it to him, and being a nice guy, of course, he just walked away. But if he had been a regular German, a regular German guard or SS man, they might have beat me up. It had been different.
Yeah.
So,
carrots.
Bar was... not liked by those people in Germany. They've had enough, really.
They were tired
been
of
bombed,
it.
And they were sympathetic to us, the civilians, unless they were a real Nazi.
Sure.
Now, our guards were old people, and I mentioned them. They weren't in the army, but they were locals, and they were nice. But out came, overseeing the German guards was a guy that came out on a bicycle dressed all in black, and we called him Oscar or something nickname. And he was mean. He had a cane, and sometimes if we got waited behind a German house during an air raid and got some of the food that was stored outside, we'd put it in our shirts and the guards were asked to search us, and very seldom did they find food. And this German came out on bicycle. He was an SS man, real Nazi. He knew they missed. So he searched us himself, lined us all up, and found some food and beat him a little while with the cane. Didn't hurt anybody. We had hats on and winter clothes.
Sure.
But the guards were, like, the old guards were sympathetic, really.
Yeah. So how did you actually get out? Like, when you finally escaped, what happened?
We were lodged in this beer hall, and the Germans were coming close, and our guards, rather than surrender us to the Americans, took us out of that beer hall instead of going to work out in the fields. Started marching us back down towards, into East Germany, towards Leipzig, Germany.
Okay.
Away from the Americans. What was the question again?
How did you actually escape when you finally escaped?
Yeah. Well, the guards marched us down into East Germany and put in a wooded area with a fence and a wired fence around it, holding a bunch of civilians, prisoners of war, Polish, Hungarian, American, and what have you in there. And every prisoner, I think, Americans had a buddy. You worked as a pair.
Okay.
Well, I had a buddy, Frank, and one of us was the boss. I was the boss. So anyway, one had to be the boss. So anyway, we went inside. Either Frank or I put our food off of our backs down and going to take our overcoat off inside this prison area. And someone took our food.
What?
While we were taking it off, and they're behind us, and you look around, and nobody was doing anything but sleeping, laying all around you on the ground, and you couldn't tell who did what. And so it really was depressive when they take that, your life blood.
Yeah.
I saved that food from Red Cross for the last few months, just eating a little bit to keep alive
rationing
for days just like this. So I told Frank, I said, we're getting out of here. Because coming in, I saw couple of old Hungarian prisoners, or civilian prisoners, ask the guard if they could go out and get some firewood and bring it back so they could build a fire and cook their food.
Okay.
So I went up to the guard, old German guard, at the entrance there of this wired encampment.
Okay.
And said, we need some firewood. I couldn't speak German. He couldn't. So anyway, I did the best. he believed everything I said. and we just kept going, though. Instead of getting wood, we just kept going back towards where we came from, because I knew the Americans were back over that way about 20 miles.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's how I escaped. And
unbelievable.
It was the guy, the old German, let me out to get some firewood, but I didn't get firewood.
We just got there,
but that, you know, the guy, somebody stole all of our Red Cross food that I could survive on it for many days, because we don't eat so much, and it was good American food in the can. But when somebody stole that,
you were done. Was it just you and Mike? Frank.
Just the two of us.
Just the two of you.
So how did you know which direction to go in?
Oh, I don't know. That's pretty simple. I mean, we just, you know, east from west, and we
I don't know east from
well,
west.
Well, we
they've been out there working. You got to remember,
we knew which way the Americans were. And because we came, they were back where we had been.
Okay.
And we know, you know, and we know where the sun's going. That's going down in the west.
Yeah. So you all go to get the firewood, but you don't. You keep going.
You just kept walking.
Oh, yeah. We weren't going to get firewood. And
what was the walk like? Or did you have to walk through woods, or was it streets?
Well, we walked through the woods, and we got to a road, Frank and I, and we stopped there for a minute. And to see which, if we were going to cross that road right there or go down where the road made a U-turn. Didn't make a U-turn, made a left turn, made a turn over a bridge. And while we were thinking about it, here comes a three-seated, big, open car with big officers, German officers. They came down the road across that bridge and right in front of us.
What?
So they were going towards where the Russians were. But the Russians were about 15 or 20 miles in one direction to the west. Americans were in this direction to the east, about the same distance, 15 or 20 miles. So we didn't want to be captured by the Russians, because they'd treat you just like we were German, I think. They weren't very terrible.
Yeah.
So we wanted the Americans. So that's where we were headed for. So once that car full of these generals, I imagine, because they're big three-seated, their hats, and you know, officers, we crossed the road, and
they didn't see you.
Oh no, of course not. We were just at the edge of the woods.
Okay,
by the road.
Oh, how they
were
scary.
They weren't talking to each other. They were just looking straight ahead, and in a rush to go somewhere.
Yeah,
but they were being closed in on both sides. The Russians over here and the Americans over here.
Yeah,
so they were in a desperate situation, and we were in a hurry. We were trying to find the Americans over here, but we crossed the road, and after a bit, we began to get hungry, and I'd escaped before, and went to a German house and get some bread, a big round loaf of bread for a pack of cigarettes. And back then, the cigarettes were worth $20. Prisoners of war cigarettes were worth $20.
Wow.
A piece, a pack. It didn't matter then. Bread was more valuable than cigarettes.
Yeah, sure.
And we get those cigarettes through the Red Cross food parcels.
Okay.
Frank and I, neither one of us smoked. So we were accumulating a lot of cigarettes. And, and someone said you could buy your way out of Germany with enough cigarettes.
Unbelievable.
I didn't try that, but I'm just trying to get food with the cigarettes. And they didn't, but German civilians didn't. Well, then finally, that's when now, though, we got turned in for the first time. This man opened the door, and the wife opened it. We got it open and stood there in the front of the door. And her two or three girls, they were about 19 or 18 or younger, I'm not sure. And we wanted to offer them cigarettes for food. Well, in the meantime, either the wife or the husband got on the phone, called the mayor, German mayor down the street.
Uh-oh.
And it wasn't very far. We were out in the country, but just a little ways, like from here to Lakewood down there, two or three blocks. He came up, and then he decided, there was nothing to do with us but just take us as prisoners. And he came back around that little town, and that they're going to put us in a little hotel there, I guess, let us go, I imagine. And a German officer came down out of the hotel and spoke to him, and he said, it's full of Germans, and there's no room for us. So they said, both suggested, yeah, the mayor and the German officer, that we go down to a block or two where it's walled in, it's the center of this little town, and put us in a haystack. And that's where we went and dug into the hay. And about midnight, the big old doors, wood doors, opened, and some German tanks came in, and they were driven by boys, and their voices had not even changed.
Wow.
So they were really, really so young. But the old man that was, must have been 80 years old, you go, you had a rough voice, and the little boys were just, but they were driving these tanks, and they were getting hay off of us, but they didn't see us, and we just laid low.
So you stayed all night in that?
Well, my buddy asked me, what are we going to do? And I knew that we better get out of there. But when daylight came, they might find us.
Right.
And, you know, kids might be more dangerous than older people. So we better get out of there. So we got up past midnight and silently walked over to that entrance to this area that we were walled in. And we walked back and hid in a big barn that we'd passed on the way over to where we were.
Uh-huh. And this needs to be a movie.
I know it does.
And we were fed a meal every day, every dinner. A slave help that worked on this farm,
okay,
he was Polish native, would bring us a meal. So we had no... Well, in the mornings, we'd go down to the bottom of the barn. And there was a big old guy about 6'4" or 6'5". I think he was sort of dumb in the head. I'm not sure. But he would give us milk.
Okay.
But he wasn't in the service. I don't know whether it was German or native, or Polish or whatever, but he would give us milk. That's our breakfast. And he did have a problem mentally. He was something. Otherwise, he'd been in the army.
Yeah.
And then we'd go back up in the hay barn and... And there's this this person who worked this farm for our Germans. He was a Polish native, would bring us food at night. And then one evening he came up and said, come. He said the Americans had sent out a patrol down the hill on a little narrow road down there. And he thought they'd be coming back. Because we were German lines, or American lines were over here, and the Russian over here. Well, we followed him down, and he left us. And sure enough, the Americans did come back down that road towards where the American army was. It's American patrol, it jeeps. Well, we just stood there, and every one of them passed us, except the last one. Finally, and the last one, we put our arms up. Hey, we're Americans. We thought they'd recognize us, you know.
What were you wearing?
Well, we had traded some other prisoners, Arnhem. That's when the British had that disastrous jump into the Netherlands, you know. They were prisoners of war along the way earlier. We'd traded some of our overcoats or cigarettes or something for those parachutes. And my buddy was wearing that parachutes, and they thought we were British, I guess. But but good thing we finally spoke up and said we're Americans. That last jeep, and then the guy in the jeep told the captain, says, "Captain, I told you they were Americans when they came back to pick us up." And from then on, we went back to American lines. And
how long were you at the house that you escaped to that they were feeding you?
Yeah, that's about 5 days, and we were in really no man's land, see, between German Americans and the Russians over here, and we stayed in the barn because I guess we were waiting for one or the other to come save us, and if we got out and captured by. Anyway, just for our own protection.
Sure.
Don't get out there and maybe get shot by a German or something. Yeah. And so we were up there about four, 5 days. You know, when you're got the same clothes on for several few months or weeks, you look like a tramp. You don't look like a soldier, and especially if you got that British jump jacket on. That doesn't look like American uniform to anybody. So they weren't any anxious to pick us up. Across the way from us was a couple of young boys. They were from Italy. They were trying to go back to home to Italy. They weren't going to pick them up, but they weren't picking us up either. We didn't look like Americans at all.
Yeah.
You know, you have the same clothes on. It's just...
I mean, I can't even imagine. You got to get his book, Prisoner's Odyssey, because you can get it on Amazon. And it's going to tell all of these stories, right, Mike, in here that go into pretty good detail.
Into more detail, and there's more stories.
Yeah, I'm sure. So, how long was it after the Americans picked you up that you ended up back home?
In America.
Do you know?
Oh, yeah. They picked us up. That was around in East Germany.
Okay.
Took us to Leipzig, and the Americans had a hospital there.
Okay.
Well, I went to a Red Cross right there in Leipzig to tell them about my dysentery.
Okay.
You know, dysentery is uncontrollable bowel movement, and I've had that for the last 2 or 3 months. And I didn't eat much, but what I ate, it just went.
Yeah.
You can imagine how frail I was. They thought I was in pretty bad shape. Yeah. So they sent me to that hospital.
Okay.
And I remember the nurse looking down at me and just sympathetically, my gosh, look what he's turned into. Well, there wasn't a day or two later, they put me on an airplane, flew me to England.
Okay.
And they gave me 6 meals a day. And I'd eat 6. And every time I'd be just as hungry as I could be. I stayed there a month in England, and that probably put all the weight back on me.
Okay.
And then they flew me back to New York City, and from there to Dallas Love Field.
What year was that?
1945.
Okay. 1945, Camille.
Wow.
Although then the war ended, you know, that year in May, I think. And this was... May or June or something like that.
Okay.
June, I guess.
Man, the flight from there to here must have been just,
so long. When did your mom find out that you were fine? Was it after you came back to the States?
She probably knew a month or so before I came back to the States.
Okay.
So there really a lot of time passed after I was liberated that she didn't even know that I was alive.
Free. Yeah.
Wow.
But she knew finally that I was alive, and they knew I was liberated, and
amazing.
And they were ready. They met me at Love Field, my mother and my 2 or 3 of her sisters, my aunts.
Okay.
So
I bet you were so happy to be home.
Oh my God! I try to remember how happy I was, but people aren't that happy. I mean, you know, I remember telling myself, I could have a flat on my tire every single day and change it, and it just wouldn't bother me one bit. And, you know, I mean, I didn't have any problems.
Wow.
It was just wonderful.
And where was your buddy Frank?
But if you have a flat now, it sort of might make you mad.
Yeah.
No, I got to be off. You know, I got to go out there and change that tire. I'm supposed to be somewhere.
I'd do it with a smile. So, where, like Camille said, where did you keep up with Frank?
Yes, I did keep up with him, but not all that much. But I did much later in life, because I went on to college. But I did later, and because he married and he lost his wife, and he lived up in Ohio.
Okay.
And I went up there to see him, and I don't know how he wasn't in bad shape as I was. Because that nurse in Leipzig saw I was just bones.
Wow.
And she knew. They flew me to England. I stayed there and fed me 6 meals a day. But some way, Frank got in with the regular American Army, and so he just joined the regulars and went to the port at Le Havre to get on the boats to go back to America. Maybe I could have done the same thing, but they treated me differently.
Wow. Well, Thank you so much, because absolutely an incredible story.
It's Herb amazing. Senior.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I mean, your life is just absolutely incredible. You've had a great career in insurance, which is right here, like we said, off of Abrams. And, you know, Herb Senior, get the book. Man, Prisoner's Odyssey. Camille, I'm just kind of blown away, because I think when you're, when he's telling these stories, you're mm-hmm. thinking about what it looked like or and how you felt.
Uh-huh. Trying to envision it.
Trying to vision, yeah, just trying to put that in your head. So, you know, thank you for everything that you've done for our community and for our country. Thank you.
Yeah.
Well, and thank you for coming on the show.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for being in this very house that I came back to.
Honored.
The house he grew up in.
Yeah.
Honored.
And,
yeah.
Honored.
And wow. I really thank you. Yeah. Thank you. And it's
well, thank
nice
you.
Nice to be back in America. I tell you, there are so much goodness here and so much food and shelter. And,
yeah.
It's a blessing. We're in a good, God bless America has.
Well, thank we want to say definitely for November and all the time, thank you
thank
for
you.
Being a veteran and all the veterans out there and people that are serving now. You know, we owe our freedoms to people like you.
Well, thank you for your time and what you're doing and what you're saying. We appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Wow. And Mike, thank you for joining us as well. And he's running the ship over here and keeping her grounded and steering the ship in the right direction.
So. Yes, well, thank you. I'd always love to hear a story.
Yeah.
And it's all those, the same story. I hear something different
every time.
Yeah.
Amazing. Get the book.
It is amazing.
Camille, that's all I got for right now. What an incredible, wow, I'm moved. My grandfather was in the World War II and the Korean War, so.
Oh, wow.
He would have been 100, I think, this year, I think. So, yeah, so, man, they may have known each other. You never
they
know.
They may have, you know. Yeah. Well, these stories are important to make people realize how lucky they are, right?
Oh, my goodness. I do every single day. When he talks about the food, I'm like, we can't even throw a stone without hitting four restaurants right here.
Yeah.
All right. Well, Camille, that's all I got this week. So what in East Dallas is going on?
I don't know. Stick around. We'll find out.
All right. We'll see you guys.